Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. From the street level, the new Golden Plow Lodge looks like it is complete. Yet, there is a hive of activity going on in the background as officials, residents, families, and caregivers prepared for the big move. In this interview, Denise Marshall, Director of Public Works for Northumberland County, will explain what is going on. She will cover everything from inspectors to staff preparations to getting clients ready. The logistics are huge, and everyone sounds like they're flat out. She will also give an update on the Campbellford Bridge project. Have a listen. I'm so pleased to have with me today Denise Marshall, Director of Public Works for Northumberland County. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Thank you. Good morning. Happy to be here.
What is the current status of the new Golden Plow Lodge?
So we are coming up to a very exciting milestone. We are nearing completion of construction of the new Golden Plow Lodge in Northumberland County Archives and Museum. We are really just in the final stages from a building inspection and completing construction deficiencies, and are really looking forward to sort of focusing on the next steps with working towards the Ministry of Long-Term Care occupancy and permits.
I'm sure most people are interested in this question is, when do you expect to move in?
I know this is the question on everyone's mind. So at this point, as I said, with construction nearing completion, the focus really is on what are all the approvals that we need to put in place with the Ministry of Long-Term Care and how we get the occupancy from the ministry. Staff have been working towards the occupancy with the ministry over the last couple of years in preparation. There's a lot of training that needs to be done from a staff perspective, and policies to be updated and information that needs to be provided, and then ministry inspections before we're able to move residents into the building. So a lot of this work is underway right now. We plan to be, we're hoping for ministry inspections over the next couple of months. And we are actually planning a bit of a mock move in February to help prepare for that resident move. And as I said, once we have some updates more from the ministry, we'll be able to set that actual move date. But we are getting very close to that significant milestone as well.
Okay, I didn't hear a date in there, but how about, I was looking at a report and there was a projection that it was going to be March of 2026. Is that still the horizon you're working towards?
We're working towards sometime in the next couple of months. And as I said, it really just depends on, again, getting those final approvals and inspections from the ministry. But those are general timelines that we're working towards.
There was a projection at one point that this was all going to be done by the fall of 2025. What happened?
So through the construction stage, again, we just had there were a few delays with some of the construction work that was happening. We did have a minor flood on site that caused some delays to the project. Again, things just took a little longer than anticipated. We did move forward to get some partial occupancy, which we did get in the fall of 2025, which really allowed us to have staff get into the building, start acquainting themselves with the building, preparing some of the training protocols and policies to prepare for ministry inspections. So while we were delayed with the construction, we were able to sort of move forward with some of the other preparations to try to help mitigate some of those timelines.
If you look from the street level outside, it seems to be done. You've talked a lot about what has to go on inside. Can you maybe give us a better perspective on, you know, you keep talking about inspections and things like that. Why is that so significant and why is it so time consuming?
So yes, construction is largely complete. The last couple months, the focus has been on commissioning. So commissioning all of the major systems in the building. So mechanical, electrical. So there is work that happens with that. And then building inspection. So this is coming in, the building inspector attending the site, ensuring that everything meets current building code and also fire codes. And so that work has been ongoing over the last couple of months. That's related to the, again, building inspection and getting the building occupancy permit. And then the next phase is from a Ministry of Long-Term Care perspective, where they have their set of requirements, and those they'll be coming in to do their inspection to see that everything is set up and meets all the requirements from a Ministry of Long-Term Care perspective.
Now, the rationale for all of this is what? Like, what is everybody trying to do at this particular point? We talk about these inspections, and I'd be curious to know just how many there are that you have to go through in order to sort of meet a particular threshold.
Every project's different. It really just depends. As I said, from a building inspector perspective, it's to meet building code. So the inspector comes in once we've reached a certain stage in the project. They come in, they walk through the building. This is a very large facility. It's over 200,000 square feet. That takes time to do the inspections. It's not done in a couple of hours. We're talking days in order to do the inspection. So when they walk through, it's just like with your house, when you're building a house or doing a renovation, often there are small things that are found. Sometimes there's some more major things that are found. Then we need to go back, address those issues, make sure that they're completed. And then we bring the inspector back and say, yep, this work has been done. Let's take a look. Does everything meet the code now? Sometimes there's clarifications that are required where the inspector would like some clarification from the architect as to why something was done a certain way and how that meets the code. There's some discussion. Then we move forward. So as I said, it's just sometimes there's just a lot of back and forth. And with it being a very large facility, that takes some time.
I would imagine, too, that the fact that it's a health-related facility, the standards must be higher, different. In what way?
Yes, there are. So as I said, depending on the different type of use of the building, there are different requirements under code. And so that is definitely something that takes a little bit more time to look at. Definitely some different higher thresholds or just things that are different from, say, a standard residential home or commercial building. And that's the same thing once the ministry comes. They have certain specific things they're looking for as well to meet the Ministry of Long-Term Care standards.
I'd like to move on. Can you explain the move-in process? You alluded to it earlier. Can you give us a little more detail about what that involves?
Mm-hmm. So the county's retained some professionals who are experts in healthcare relocations. That's actually the name of, you know, of again, of what they, of their company and how they move people from long-term care homes, hospital environments. So that is their expertise. And so we've been planning for this move for months. And ultimately the move will happen. The physical move will happen in a day. So it's quite succinct. It's well-planned, it's organized. But all of that leading up to it is, you know, how we move, making sure that they have their items moved over and then how we physically move them. We have, again, special transport set up and how we move them over, but it's all very coordinated, that it's tracked on either side to make sure that we know who's going when and that the information and things that need to go with each resident are with them and go with them, and other things are moved separately. So it's a very detailed process that we have dedicated staff of the county as well working with the external consultants on that process. And as I mentioned, we're planning a mock move in February to kind of test the process and make sure that we feel comfortable, work through any hiccups, so that we're well prepared when the actual move happens.
Do the patients and the caregivers know what's going on, and how are you preparing them?
Yes, so we're having regular communication with the residents and their families. There's a number of sort of town hall meetings, I guess, happening at GPL for those residents and families to keep them up to date on the progress of construction. And we've increased those more recently to start preparing them for the move and what's going to be involved and starting to provide more details. On again the move and the new building and what they can expect.
How many people are involved in this move?
Well, we have GPL staff, so they will play an active role. Obviously, the residents, their families will have a role in again helping to pack up some of their personal belongings and helping with some of that move. And then again, our external consultant, their team helping. We have also retained the moving like vehicles for moving. So it's quite an operation. And as I said, because it's done fairly succinctly in a fairly short amount of time, there's a number of people involved, but it's very well coordinated.
Sounds like hundreds of people.
Yeah, I don't know the number offhand, but as I said, there's when you look at all the GPL staff, and again, when we're looking at 150-ish residents or so that you're trying to move, obviously there are numerous people and many hands required in order to make it smooth, a smooth move and transition.
The logistics must be just crazy.
And that's why, again, we're relying on an external expert that has done this numerous times before. And we've also, our staff actually attended a move in Stittsville last year to see it in action themselves. So again, to help prepare to see what is required, what works well, which was done by the same company. So that was really helpful in preparing.
Must be just like the invasion of Normandy. Now, change is always a big deal for anyone. This is going to be a huge change for the clients. Once they are in the new building, what will be done to help them adjust?
So again, our GPL staff have been GPL management and staff have been working and preparing for this transition over the last couple of years. There is ongoing discussion and communication from the leadership team with staff on, you know, what's happening, when the move is going to happen, and also part of the preparation in order to get the Ministry of Long-Term Care permits and occupancy is that staff have had time to get into the building. They've had sufficient training. They are acquainted with the new building. They know how everything works. So from a staff perspective, that's well underway, and those are the preparations from a staff perspective. And obviously, staff, you know, their concern is also making sure we're providing that care for the residents and that they feel comfortable moving, and again, helping them adjust to change. And that's part of the ongoing communication and the town hall meetings with residents and families has really been a key component of sort of managing the change and helping residents to prepare for the move and what to expect. So that's been trying to, again, prepare them and so that hopefully there's not too many surprises. But again, our staff are very caring and are very concerned and will be very much looking to make sure that it's a smooth transition along with their families as well.
Do you get much feedback from the caregivers and thinking now of the families and that and friends and the clients themselves?
Yep, so that's really what these town hall meetings and those communications are. It's really a two-way conversation. Information is shared with them, and then we hear what their questions and comments and concerns are and look to address them in those meetings or in a follow-up if we don't have the answers right there. So that's a really great forum for that.
Is the county going to need more staff? I know earlier you were talking about how huge this building is. Are you going to need to hire more people?
So part of the for GPL, they have already done some upstaffing in 2025 in order to yeah, meet the requirements for the new facility. The new facility, it's a larger facility, but it's also an increase in number of residents. So we're going from 151 bed home to 180 bed home. So just with that alone requires, again, additional staffing complement. So that is something that has been, additional staffing has been hired and again, is required for the move.
You've already talked about the size of the building and that there's going to be all this new stuff, but there are some new features of this building. I understand it was going to have some state-of-the-art technology. Can you explain what that means and how that'll be reflected in the new building?
So it's a beautiful facility. There are many spaces. One of the ideas is it's really respecting that it's a home for residents. This is not an institutional environment. So it's very bright, a lot of light coming in throughout the entire facility. Every room has access to light, whether it be to the exterior or facing to one of the interior courtyards. So we're trying to ensure that every resident has access to light. There are a number of fireside lounges and cafes on the main area that families can take residence and be able to enjoy those spaces. There's a large auditorium and chapel area. We have a greenhouse for agrotherapy activities, a salon. So those are many of the features that, again, the residents and their families will be able to enjoy. As far as just the building itself, again, it's to modern technology. So just from mechanical and electrical systems that are in place, again, really just from its current and modern standards and design, and to provide a very efficient building. We are seeking LEED certification, so sort of that environmental standard that will provide sort of efficiencies from an operations perspective, but again, really looking at it from a green building aspect as well.
Where is this in terms of the budget? I know that there was a number mentioned in a report earlier about a total project is going to now cost somewhere around $145 million, which is up from $115 million, which I think was the previous projection. Where are we at currently?
So we updated the project budget in 2024 that was provided, and we're still working within that projected $145 million for, again, the total project cost. Again, that includes everything from the property itself to the design to the construction stage for the building, all of the consulting fees, all of the furniture and equipment. It also includes the next phase of demolition and final site works for the project. So we are still working within that.
Who's paying for it in terms of taxpayers and grants and that kind of thing?
There was some funding that was received from the ministry, and there is it's largely covered by the county. It's being funded through Infrastructure Ontario, through a funding arrangement through Infrastructure Ontario for the large portion of the project.
So when you say that means you've borrowed the money and taxpayers will be paying it off over a number of years?
Yes.
How much is that?
So, as I said, the funding agreement each year will be paying just over $7 million towards that debenture.
Are you still trying to get a hold of grants, still applying for government money?
We did, through the construction phase, try to secure additional funding and weren't successful. Once construction is complete, there's typically not many opportunities for that additional funding, but obviously if there were, we would definitely be seeking those as well.
All right. I'd like to move on again and talk about the archive and museum, which mm-hmm. is going to be housed inside the building.
So the archives and museum is, again, part of the overall building. So from a construction standpoint, when we talk about nearing end of construction, it is also part of that and nearing end of construction. The next phase for Northumberland County Archives is the move of all of their collection. They're currently in the Coburg Library, and they will be having to pack up that collection and move it into the new space. And also they will be preparing for the inaugural exhibition that they plan to showcase in the building as well. So plans right now are really around preparing to move the collection and preparing to set up their exhibition.
There is a huge amount of storage space for the archive and museum. Are there any plans to consolidate museums and archives from across the county?
They currently do provide services for some of the municipalities. I'm not aware of consolidation for everywhere, but I know that the anticipation is that we wanted to have enough space to make sure that we have room for the current collections as well as any future collections, and any collaboration and sharing is something that we always look to as a county.
The last thing I wanted to talk to you about was the Campbellford Bridge project, or the Trent River Crossing. But before we begin, can you describe where the bridge will be located so people who are not from the area can picture this in their mind as to where it'll go?
So the new crossing in Campbellford, we're calling it sort of the new Trent River Crossing, is just south of the existing Campbellford Bridge. It will tie in between 2nd Street on the east side of the bridge and Alma Street on the west side of the bridge. So it's, as I said, it's south of the existing crossing, but still within those town limits.
Can you describe what is being proposed for the bridge, such as how big it'll be and so forth?
It will be a new 188-meter span bridge. It's going to have a roundabout on the west side at Grand Road and Alma Street. On the east side, it'll sort of overpass Saskatoon and land before you get to Front Street. The bridge itself will be two driving lanes of traffic. It will have on-road bike lanes. There's also pedestrian sidewalks. There will be the Rotary Trail goes around the Trent River, so it will carry on and continue underneath the structure on the west side. And there's also going to be, with the new structure, improvements to the road network and intersections that it will lead into to make sure that they can accommodate vehicles and from a safety perspective and active transportation perspective.
So what is the current status of this project then?
We are currently at 90% design, and we are nearing completion. We are currently doing a peer review of the design and looking to incorporate any changes based on that peer review. We're also actively in utility relocations. Some have been completed and others will be underway in the upcoming year. Property acquisition is also underway, and the agency approval process. So we are, again, nearing that end of design and hoping to have the final design complete in the next few months, pending sort of all of the agency approvals and finalization of the peer review.
So when do you expect the tender to go out to begin construction?
Currently, we are, as I said, once design's complete, we'll be able to finalize that tender and move forward the procurement process. But we are currently looking to secure funding to move ahead with construction. We have about $15 million between reserves and development charge studies that are set aside for this project. But there is about just over $40 million that we'd be looking for funding. And so we have been, again, actively applying for grants and looking to federal, provincial funding and advocacy in order to secure some funding so that we can move this project forward.
So without the funding, this isn't going ahead.
At this point in time, that's the direction that we're looking towards, that additional funding.
Is this a cautionary tale for municipal government about maintaining infrastructure? Because in 2016, the bridge was going to cost like $12.6 million, And the latest estimates I found were it's close to 56 million. Like, that's four times more than original. Why was there so many delays, and why did this not move forward when it was a lot more reasonable in terms of cost?
So there's a number of factors there. The 10 years has passed since that estimate. And obviously it's been in those 10 years, we've had some of the most challenging economic times that we've ever seen. And that's had a huge impact, obviously, on construction pricing and for all infrastructure. So that's had a big impact. But also the original estimate was focused solely on the structure itself. It was very much a high level at that stage of the project. That was during the environmental assessment process and is a higher sort of more op based on conceptual design. So as we move into detailed design, you really start to refine what the requirements are, what the design looks like, and understand all of the quantities and updated costing for that. So that's where, again, the cost for the project has increased. In addition, those original costs, again, did not include all of the other costs for the project. They were focused looking only at some of the construction of the bridge. They didn't include things like construction or contract management, contingency, some of the requirements through the approval process. So if there's any offsetting that's required, fishery offset, utility relocation. So again, there are a number of items that just weren't included in those original estimates, which also add to the project cost.
What's going on with the old bridge?
The existing bridge is to be maintained. It's through the environmental assessment process. It was determined that we needed both structures in order to have the capacity that's required in Trent Hills as well as for the broader Northumberland County. That bridge was constructed in 1968, and so it is within the next 5 years, it is going to require a major rehabilitation. And that is one of the risks of not moving forward with the construction of the new bridge, because that major rehabilitation would likely require a closure of the structure. And there is no simple detour to get from one side of the bridge to the other. It's approximately a 25-minute detour to the north to another structure. So we are continuing to monitor the existing bridge, doing required maintenance and repairs as needed, but are also preparing that in the next couple of years, we'll need to do a major rehabilitation on that structure.
What's the community response like these days? I guess there was the Second Street Residents Association that has raised concerns about heritage and property impact. Have all the traffic and safety concerns been addressed?
We've gone through extensive public consultation and agency consultation, and also a lot of Indigenous engagement through this project. Through the environmental assessment stage, there was extensive consultation, and that carried through into the detailed design stage. We listen to the concerns that have been brought forward and look to adapt and address those through the design when looking at, say, a traffic safety. Looking things like the roundabout really help to address some safety concerns, also wanting to make sure that we have active transportation, so sidewalks and bike lanes, and we've incorporated some pedestrian crossovers. So again, how resident or pe pedestrians can move from one side of the road to the other. So those things have been incorporated into the design to address the concerns.
Is there anyone that continues to question the need for a new bridge?
I think we do still hear some. I think there are still some residents who may think that it's not necessary or may not see the reason or rationale. But as I said, for the most part, any feedback I've heard is that residents want to see the structure and they want to see it sooner than later. We do know that there is significant growth coming to Northumberland, and in Trent Hills, there is a need. The new Campbellford Hospital and Campus of Care is going to be moving forward, and this structure is really necessary to help ensure that we have that movement from one side of the bridge to the other for not only residents from an economic standpoint, but from that emergency services perspective as well, to ensure that we have redundancy from and movement across the bridge.
So what's next for the bridge?
So we're going to move forward and complete the design. We want to finalize all of the approvals, and essentially we want to be construction ready and shovel ready so that when we get funding from provincial or federal government, we can move forward. As I said, we will continue to advocate and again, look for funding opportunities and apply for any grants so that we can move ahead with the construction phase.
And what should listeners be looking for the new Golden Plow?
So I think, as I said, I think we're just excited and looking forward to the resident move and opening of the facility in the next couple of months. I think from the archives and museum, I know that they're also working towards, again, moving that collection and preparing to open that to the public as well. So a lot of exciting things happening in 2026 for both opening of the GPL as well as that Northumberland County Archives and Museum.
Denise Marshall, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you.
That was Denise Marshall, Director of Public Works for Northumberland County. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.